Okay. Bag of food, here we go. Okay. The pasuk starts. Va'akel Moshe kol adat Yisrael v'yomer aleihem ela dvarim asher tzivah Hashem la'asot odam. Moshe gathers all of Klal Yisrael, and he's about to. We've already read about it for the past few weeks, but Klal Yisrael have not yet officially been told. Have not yet been given the charge. Okay, now go build the Mishkan, and this is it. Va'akel Moshe kol adat Yisrael v'yomer aleihem. Moshe gathered all the people, and he says to them, "Ela dvarim asher tzivah Hashem la'asot odam. These are the things that God commanded." It's interesting to note, by the way, just a worthwhile, we'll throw it out there, it's not even a word, it's just Emes La'amito, the Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, and Emes La'Yaakov points out that Rav says, Vayakel Moshe, there was a gathering of the people. Anytime that you want to do something that is worthwhile, particularly in the Jewish world, that is a theme that we've spoken about time and time again, you need unity. By Har Sinai we had Vayichan Sham Yisrael Neged Ahar Ke'ish Echad B'Lev Echad. And again over here, when we want to continue the Har Sinai experience, to have the Vashachanti Betocham, where God will dwell inside Klal Yisrael, to have that presence. Again, God only is interested in dwelling when there is a Hikahalut, when there is a sense of togetherness, and when there is a sense of unity of purpose. I'll parenthetically throw in that the Midrash says that when Yisrael worshipped the Chet Egel, there were actually 12 golden caps. Each shaven did it on its own. There was disunity. Anything worthwhile is required to have unity. Okay, that's just throw it out there. By Yakel, gather. It's important to try to join together and join forces. Galvanize all Jews to be together. Anyway, here we go. So here we go. Here's the Tzibur of the Mishkan. By Yakel, Moshe, Eskol, Adav, Eskol, Yom, Erlam. This is what God commanded. And what do we start with? First we talk about Shabbos. That's a little bit odd. We've already spoken about it once before. Why is it that Moshe mentioned Shabbos over here? It's true that God mentioned Shabbos, but when did God mention Shabbos? God already told us, listen, build the Mishkan. But at the very end, God says, you should know that when you build the Mishkan, don't forget Shabbos. That seems fair. This is what I want you to do. I want you to build the Mishkan and keep Shabbos. And make sure that the Mishkan's construction doesn't come at the expense of Shabbos. But why is it that Moshe switches the order? So we spoke about it last time. We won't repeat what we said then. And new pshad this time. This time a pshad that comes from Rav Mordechai Kamenetsky. Rav Mordechai Kamenetsky says the following, cousin to Moshe Kamenetsky. Distant cousin, right?
Oh, it's Rav
Yaakov's grandson. Yeah. We're like fourth cousin once removed, but it's something. Mm-hmm.
Look at his family tree one day. I'm sure it's all
on. Fourth cousin, fifth cousin once removed. We're all fifth cousin once removed. Anyway, so Rav Mordechai Kamenetsky gives the following explanation. For the explanation, a quick tale. Albert Einstein and his lab assistant were once putting the finishing touches on the paper, and the paper was complete, and all they were lacking was a paper clip to put it together and distribute it to whoever it had to get to. So they turned the office upside down. There were pens, there were pencils, there were scissors, there was letter openers, there was the thing that takes the staples out, you know what I'm talking about, like that special lock thing, the staple remover. There was that, there was all of that, but they couldn't find any good paper clips. They found like some ratty paper clips, and they were trying to bend them back into shape. Nothing was working. They couldn't bend the deck into shape. Ah! And then finally, they found a brand new box of paper clips. So when they found the brand new box of paper clips, Albert Einstein took a paper clip, and with that brand new paper clip, he tried to smooth out the broken paper clip that he was trying to fix before, to straighten it out so that he can use it. So the lab assistant says to him, "What are you doing? We just found a whole box of paper clips. Let's just put it on and be done." He says, "No, once I get fixated on a goal, I have to follow through. It's very hard to dissuade me from stopping that goal." But of course, you know, as brilliant as Albert Einstein is, that was a ridiculous thing to do. You had the paper clip, just put it on and go on. But what happens is sometimes we get fixated, we lose sight of the forest for the trees. We're so focused And that's exactly what would happen. If we told the people, listen, build the Mishkan, the people will get so excited about the Mishkan, they might build the Mishkan and get so carried away that Chas V'Shalom would come with violation of Shabbos. Right? But that the Mishkan is the means. We can't lose sight of the ends. The ends is to have the Shekhinah present, to have God's presence dwelling inside of us. All of that is obviously most clearly communicated through Shabbos. Sheshes Yomim Ta'aseman, that God created the world, God rests on the seventh day. Right? If we were to be Mitzavah the Mishkan, then what would happen, says Mordechai Kamenetsky, is that we might get so caught up in the Mishkan that it would come at the expense of, yeah, let's just get that Mishkan up, and the Mishkan would turn to being me-centric instead of God-centric. And in order to dissuade that, Moshe said, no, let's just keep things in perspective. We're going to build a Mishkan, but it's for the ultimate purpose of spreading God's divine presence in the world. Sheshes Yomim Te'aseh Melacha V'yom HaShviyeh Lechem Kodesh Shabbat Shabbat Tzon Lashem. Okay, that's one idea. It's interesting to note that this pasuk says, Sheshes Yomim Te'aseh Melacha V'yom HaShviyeh Lechem Kodesh. What does that mean, Sheshes Yomim Te'aseh Melacha? It's a very, very subtle difference. It could have said, Sheshes Yomim Ta'aseh Melacha, for 6 days you shall work, and on the 7 day Shabbos. But it doesn't say 6 days you shall work. It doesn't say ta'aseh. It says te'aseh. 6 days work shall be done. Right? That's called reflexive, I think, in English. In the English grammar rules, it's the reflexive. Work shall be done. It doesn't say you will work, but work shall be done. So why does it say that 6 days work shall be done? Chafetz Chaim says the following. It is sometimes very, very hard to convince a person to not work on Shabbos. Right? You're asking a person, ostensibly, to reduce his income by 1/7. If a person earns $400 a day, right? So you're either asking him to work 6 days and earn 4 times 6, which is 2,400, right? A week, right? Or, did I just do that correctly?
Yeah,
24 hours. Yeah. I don't know, or, right, if he works a 7 day, then that's an additional $400, right? 2,800. That's a big difference, right? So it's very, very hard to ask a person to do that. How does a person come to the How does a person come to the willpower to resist being Mechalel Shabbos? How is it that he takes off a 7 day? It comes from a recognition that Sheshes Yamim Te'aseh Melacha, work shall be done. If we think that we are responsible for our own work, then yeah, then we think that when we are responsible for our own work, then what happens is, then we think that that 7 day is critical. Well, every day I'm earning money. Every day I. But if we recognize that really HaKadosh Baruch Hu has already figured out what we're going to earn and how much we're going to earn, it's really work shall be done, that we're, it's not that we are doing the work, we're just following through on HaKadosh Baruch Hu's divine plan, then it is much easier for us to rest on the 7 day. The mashal that the Chafetz Chaim gives is the following. He says, if you have a barrel of wine, and that barrel of wine has a spigot on it, right? And through that spigot, you open it, and the wine comes out. So he says, if you were to put another spigot on that same barrel and open up both barrels, you're not going to get more wine out of the spigot. You're not going to get more wine out of the barrel. Whatever amount of wine is in the barrel is what you'll get. It's the same thing. If you work 6 days or 7 days, it's just opening up another spigot. Right? You work 6 days, you'll get a certain amount. You work 7 days, you'll get the same amount. There's really no point in doing it. That's why the Chafetz Chaim says, Sheshes Yomim Te'aseh Melacha, work should be done, not ta'aseh, you should work. Okay. Okay. It's interesting, in that same pasuk, we'll talk a little bit about Zmiris. Anyone sings Kol Nekadesh? on Shabbos kol metanesh v'karoila kol shai meshabbos. Oh, so what is that? Let's just talk about that first line. Kol mekadesh shvi karoila. Anyone who sanctifies Shabbos as is fitting. Kol shomer Shabbos. All who guard Shabbos. Kadas mechalalo. Kol shomer Shabbos kadas mechalalo. Anyone who guards Shabbos properly to make sure that he doesn't violate it. Right. So a simple question. Why does it say kol in the pasuk twice? Why does it say kol in the zemi twice? It could say kol mekadesh shvi'i shomer Shabbat. Why does it say kol mekadesh shvi'i kol shomer Shabbat? Right. Kol shomer Shabbos. Right. So obviously it sounds good in the tune, but why is it that it says kol twice? Kol mekadesh shvi'i kol shomer Shabbat. Chafetz Chaim again explains that there is two types of people when it comes to Shabbos. Right? There is the, as it says in this pasuk, Sheshet Yomim Ta'aseh Melachah V'Yom HaShviʼi Yeh Lachem Kodesh, Shabbat Shabbaton. There's the Shabbat Shabbaton people, the Kum Ve'aseh people, the people that actively set out to make for themselves a Shabbos experience. It's not just that, right? They take full advantage. They sing the meals, they tell the great Torah, they learn, they spend time with their families, they invite their friends, they make it into a real Shabbos. They rest and they recognize and appreciate fully God's presence. There's another type of person who's also a Shabbos person, right? But he's not Shabbat Shabbaton, he is Shomer Shabbat. He keeps Shabbos, he guards over Shabbos, meaning he abstains from doing it. I'm Shomer Shabbos. What does that mean, I'm Shomer Shabbos? It means that after shul, I quickly eat my meal, and I go to sleep for about 14 hours. Next morning, I wake up, I go hang out with my friends in shul. I walk there, of course, I don't drive, I don't text even, I don't do anything like that. I just go hang out for 2 hours, talk to my friends in the back of the shul, I go home, I grab a quick lunch, and I sleep for another 4 hours, and then it's Matzah Shabbos. I wasn't Mechalal Shabbos at all. I was Shomer Shabbos. Right? I was Shomer Shabbos, I didn't violate an Isser. But I wasn't the full, I didn't give it a positive spin experience. Those are the two types of, those people that make Shabbos positive, the Shabbat Shabbaton, that's Kol Mekadesh Shvi'i, and there's Kol Shomer Shabbat. There's two types, right? And how does the paragraph continue? Kol Shomer Shabbos, Schar Arbe Me'od, the Sakhar that you get is great, Al Pi Po'alo, based on your Po'al. Based on what you've done. Meaning, depending on the type of Jew that you are, you'll always get reward. But you should be aware that there's different levels of keeping Shabbos, and connected to those different levels, congruent to those different levels, there's also different levels of Shchar. So, Kol Mekadesh Shvi'i and Kol Shomer Shabbos. There's a notion of Bayom HaShvi'i Yalachem Kodesh Shabbat Shabbaton, and there's a notion of Kol Asevo Melacha Yuma. There's a notion of abstaining from Melacha. Both are critical, but make sure that your Shabbos doesn't just remain in the realm of Kol Shomer Shabbat. And let it be also Mekadesh Shvi'i. Okay. Let's see. Let's look at what we're going today. Okay. Let's go to... Pasuk Chaf. Vayitzu kol adat bnei Yisrael milifnei Moshe. What's the significance? It says Vayachel Moshe, and then it says Vayitzu kol adat bnei Yisrael milifnei Moshe. The entire people left from Moshe. It could have just said Vayitzu kol adat bnei Yisrael. Why does it say Milifnei Moshe? What's the significance of Milifnei Moshe? Says Rav Elie Lupian that it is often discernible on a person when you see him the experience that he previously had. Right? If I see a person after he comes from, let's say, some depressing type of event or occurrence, his face will be down, he'll be schleppy. And if I see him after a great simcha, then he'll have an extra spring in his step. it's possible to tell, right? It's the same thing. What the pasuk is trying to stress over here, that after they left, it was possible that they were lifnei Moshe, that they were by Moshe, they were uplifted and inspired. It is sometimes possible for a person, by virtue of his greatness, to leave an impression on people. Sometimes you walk away from people, and there's no impression left. Right? If I leave a conversation that I've just had with somebody, sometimes I can walk away and people, yeah, I don't know, you spoke to him, you didn't speak to him, he moved you, he didn't move you. But there are some people that you walk away from them, and it's just an amazing. I remember when I was in YU, so you were able to schedule meetings with the Rosh Yeshiva sometimes when you needed some guidance and advice. I used to schedule meetings with my Rebbe, Rav Rosenzweig. I'd walk out of that room after the meeting, I'd have a huge smile plastered across my face. I gotta learn more. There's a certain inspiration of, that was the stress. Moshe Rabbeinu had that ability to move people, to inspire people. That's the significance of Milifnei Moshe. It wasn't just, oh yeah, okay. It was Milifnei Moshe. When you were in front of Moshe, you thought that you can do it all. You felt accomplished. You felt like you can strive. You felt like you can get close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's just one of the things that a leader does. If you want to be a leader, like Moshe Rabbeinu, you have to make sure that your interaction with people is positive, that your interaction with people is inspiring, that you have a clear set of values that are worthy of mimicking, and bring that forth, you know, almost wear it on your sleeve in a certain sense, to inspire and galvanize the people to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
Who said that?
Rav Elia Lupian. Okay. Next pasuk. Pasuk Kavala. Vayavo kol ish asher nasa'o libo v'chol asher nadva ruchu oto hevi'o trumas Hashem. Everyone brought the truma. Right? And then the next pasuk says, Vayavo anashim al hanashim. The men came along with the woman. The Medrash over here tells us, and Sukkot Chafal Chafabez, the Medrash over here tells us that the women actually were a lot more forthcoming with donating to the Beis HaMikdash, to the Mishkan. When Moshe gave the tzimah, the women were like, I don't need this gold ring. Huh. I'd much rather that the Mishkan have it. I don't need, you know, this 24-carat necklace. I'd much rather it go to the Mishkan. I don't need this this precious stone. I'd much rather go to the Mishkan. The women were the men were a little bit cheaper. They're like, I don't know, maybe you should save it. Why? Unlike by Chet Egel, by the way, by Chet Egel, the men were a lot more. But anyway, but the women were all gung ho.
The men were more willing to give to Chet Egel. How much do they have left to give to the Mishkan? Seriously.
Okay, that, maybe, but that's part of the problem.
It's definitely part of the problem.
No. If you have a worthwhile endeavor, you should always be willing to go. The women were very, and by the way, they had a lot left, I think, based on the Midrashim, what they took from Midrashim. But the women were definitely a lot more generous in this respect. And the Midrash says that in honor of this, they were zocha to a special yantiv. What was the special yantiv that women get that men do not get?
Mother's Day.
Huh?
I said Mother's Day.
Right, Mother's Day in modern society. But no, you know, by the way, there is no Father's Day in Israel. There's a Father's Day in America. There's no Father's Day in Israel. Only Mother's Day. It's an interesting thing. Anyway, so the special holiday that they get is Rosh Chodesh. Women have a special status on Rosh Chodesh, more so than men. There's a notion of women not to do malacha on Rosh Chodesh as opposed to men. That's a special holiday. So the question is, what's the connection? Why is it that they got the special holiday of Rosh Chodesh for being so quick to give the money? So there's a wonderful sefer. The name of the sefer is Shemin HaTov. He's the rabbi of Young Israel of Williamsburg. Nowadays in Williamsburg, you wouldn't imagine that there's a Young Israel, but it's still there, just barely. But it used to be that Williamsburg was a center, a mecca of vibrant all types of religious streams of Jewish life. So Young Israel was very big over there. So anyway, his name is Rav Weinberger. I believe the name of the sefer is Shemin HaTov. He is the uncle of a friend of mine. Anyway, so in the Sefer, he explains it. And he writes beautifully. He connects it to another Medrash. The other Medrash that they connect it to is that it says by the Kior, when they build a Kior where the Kohanim were to wash their hands, so over there, that's Perek Lamed Ches, Pasuk Ches, it says that what was the Kior constructed from? The Kior was constructed from Marhot Atzavot. What are Marhot Atzavot? Mirrors. What are these mirrors? So Rashi over there brings down also from the Medrash that Paro made the decree in Mitzrayim that anyone who is born, any male who is born, thrown into the Nile. And he gave back-breaking slave labor to the Jewish people so that they would despair and lose hope. And in fact, with the men it worked. The men said, I don't want to have children. I don't want to bring children into the surrounding world where they're just going to be born into misery, slavery, and a life of hardships. I will not do it. The women on the other end were a lot more optimistic. The women thought to themselves, no, we cannot, it's bad enough that there's a decree, but we cannot let ourselves fold. We have to be strong. We have to let our spirit rise. We have to believe that we can't perpetuate ourselves. We can continue. With God's help, we'll be matzliach. So what would the women do? They would take their mirrors and they would beautify themselves in front of the mirrors. And then when they were beautiful, they would go into the fields where their husbands were working and they would try to grab their attention and talk to them and say, and eventually, all the men that have separated from their wives went back to their wives when they were attracted and drawn to their beauty and to their resolve. The women saved the Jewish people. Physically, there was no way the Jewish people could have continued had they not reproduced. But because the women insisted and they fought for it, they, right, in the place where the men despaired, the women gave hope. Similarly, when the Mishkan was constructed, what was the point of the Mishkan? So according to many, the point of the Mishkan was to have a Makom Shechina for HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'shachanti b'tocham. The men were upset. Why were the men were upset? Because the men thought, you know, before Chayta Egel, we wouldn't have needed the Mishkan. God would have been everywhere. He would have been literally in our homes, in our tents. He would have been dwelling everywhere. And now that we've sinned, then what's going to happen? Yeah, we'll have it, but it'll just be in the Mishkan. We'll have to. They were somewhat disappointed in the Mishkan, says the Shemin HaTov. And the women said to them, right, you're just punishing yourself. What is it? You're disappointed. This is what we have now. At least we can get God on some. If you don't build the Mishkan, we'll have nothing. And then they brought their gold and they brought the silver. And they said, of course, the men were reluctant, not because they didn't. They were reluctant because they thought that the Mishkan was spiritually second best. It was reflective to them of their failings in Chayta Egel. And the woman said, maybe so, but we can't just despair. We can't say, oh, so let's give it up entirely. Let's at least get a Mishkan. You never know where we can go. You see, for me, the woman again saved us this time not from a physical annihilation, but from a spiritual one. Whereas with the men's sheet that we would have had nothing, with the women we got the Mishkan. What is the common denominator to both of these stories about the women is that when there was darkness, when there was darkness, when there was gloom, when there was struggle, it was the women that had the vision to see beyond the immediate darkness and to see the light at the end of the tunnel. That is exactly what Rosh Chodesh is all about, right? What is Rosh Chodesh? Rosh Chodesh is, of course, the time when the moon is at its least. It is dark outside. Try to walk outside on Rosh Chodesh and without a moon, assuming you're not in a city where there is lighting, and it is much, much harder to find your way than on the night when there is a full moon. It is dark, it is depressing, it is an air of despair. But the smart person knows that just as the moon is right now in its blackest state, but there is, of course, a time where the moon will grow and cast a full glow. So to the Jewish woman recognized that even though right now it seems gloomy, dark, and despair, ultimately we will prevail. And that is why the women were zocha to Rosh Chodesh. Okay. Pasuk Perek Mem, Pasuk Beis. tells us that the Mishkan was finally constructed. When was the Mishkan finally constructed? So it was constructed on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Perek Mem Pasuk Beis, it says, Bayom HaChodesh HaRishon Be'echad LaChodesh Takimet Mishkan Ol Moed. Right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe, on the first day of Nisan, you will erect the Mishkan. Now it's odd. Why is this odd? Because they actually got the tzivui to build the Mishkan when? They started construction on the Mishkan after Sukkot. Right? After Yom Kippur, Moshe Rabbeinu came down, and that's around that time, between Yom Kippur and Sukkot, after Sukkot, that's when they started the construction. And the Midrash relates that miraculously, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the nest that the Mishkan was ready already 3 months after they started construction. Tishrei Cheshvan Tevis. In Tevis it was ready. Yeah. Already in Tevis it was ready. So, question is, if it was already ready in Tevis, Rabbi Fran asks this question, if it was already ready in Tevis, why wait till Nisan? And if it really, why did God do the miracle so that it would be ready in Tevis? Let them work all the way till Nisan. If you really wanted it to be in Nisan, then work all the way. And then if you see that they finish it, good. And if not, then do the miracle, you know. At the end of Adar, do a miracle. So, oops, now it's ready. What's the point of doing the miracle so that it is ready 3 months before? So explain to my friend, what was the Mishkan? The Mishkan was the tikkun of the Cheta Egel. What was the root of Cheta Egel? The root of Cheta Egel was... Where did it come from? Close. I think the root of it was more impatience. Right? They're... Aish Moshe Boshesh, right? They told Aaron, Moshe is late, what's going on? We can't wait, we need it right now. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was teaching them, no. You have to learn to wait. Patience is a virtue. You cannot assume to have everything all at once. My friend doesn't say this, but I think it's true. Sometimes our shortcoming is that we get frustrated because we don't have instant results. Right? We're in the generation where you have instant coffee, you have instant oatmeal, you have instant internet access. When I was growing up, I remember, I don't know if you guys have this generation. First of all, there was no internet when I was growing up, but when I was in college, if you wanted internet, so you had to plug in your computer to the phone line, and you had, there were like, till it dialed up. It took 10 minutes, at least. And we thought that was instant, yeah. But there's instant coffee, instant oatmeal, instant chicken. There's instant everything. Instant soup, instant mashed potatoes. Right. And we think that there should also be instant Talmud Chacham. Instant, we come to the yeshiva and we're like, yeah, in 1 year I expect it. And when we're impatient, then what happens is when it doesn't happen a day or after a day or two, we get frustrated and we're like, forget it. This is not... Kadosh Baruch Hu is teaching us now. Serious commitment, serious service of a Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't happen instantly. You're not going to get everything. You have to learn to be patient. You don't understand the Tosfos the first time? Do it again. You don't understand it the second time? Do it a third time. Ask a person the fourth and the fifth. There's no such thing as instant. Kaveh el Hashem. Hope for a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Chazak. What doesn't always work out? So then Chazak Be'emes Libecha. Strengthen yourself. Bekaveh el Hashem. And then do it again. You have to learn that it's not everything in life is instant. You have to learn to be patient, especially when it comes to service of God. We don't always see the fruits of our efforts. We sometimes have to be patient.
It was started in Tishrei?
What was it? The construction started in Tishrei. It finished in Tevis, but it wasn't Tzivut to erect. It didn't come until... Okay, one last word. Pasuk Lamed Tes, Perek Lamed Tes, Mem Gimel. I'm sorry, I did that out of order. This should have been the previous word and then this one. Vayar Moshe et kol hamelacha, v'hineh asu otah kasher tzivah Hashem ken asu, v'yavarech otam Moshe. And then Moshe gave a blessing to the people. What's the blessing that he gave? So Rashi famously brings down, Yehi ratzon shetisha shechina b'maaseh yadeichem. May it be thy will, capital H, that the Shekhinah, that the Divine Presence will rest in your handiwork. So the question is, what exactly is this bracha that Moshe gave? After all, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said before to the Jewish people, V'atzu li migdash v'shachanti betucha, make for me a migdash, right? And I will dwell inside of you. Was Moshe Rabbeinu just reiterating this same thing? Was he saying v'shachanti betacham? Perhaps was there a deeper message that he was trying to convey? So lichaora, there's a deeper message of it that he's trying to convey. There's a story told about Rabbi Yehuda Asad. Rabbi Yehuda Asad was a gaon atzum, and a lot of people, in addition to seeking his psak, also used to seek his advice, as you often have by gedolim. You go to them not just to ask them, you know, is this chicken kosher, but you also go to them, ask them, should I invest in this and should I invest in that? So one time, a businessman came to Rabbi Yehuda Asad, the Mahari Asad, and he said to him, listen, there is a store that's going out of business in a certain area of town. I believe the price is right. I believe that I can purchase it and turn it around, and it should be a worthwhile business endeavor. What do you suppose? So Rav Asad said to him, I don't think that you should go into this endeavor. I'm not quite sure. But the guy leaves. Rav Asad said, no, okay. But a week or two later, another person comes to him with literally the same proposition. He says, what do you think? You know, I believe that with God's help I can turn it. What do you think? He says, yeah, go for it. So everyone said, yeah, Rav Asad supported this guy. So the first guy heard what Rav Asad told him, but that was my idea. So he went back to Rav Asad and said, I don't understand. Rabbi Yehuda, you told me not to do it. How come you told the other guy? So you came in here and you asked me if you should do it. You said there's a good piece of real estate that you think you can turn around, should you? Said, I wasn't sure if you'd be successful. The other guy came and he said, with God's help, I think that I can. Once you have a partner like the Kadosh Baruch Hu, then of course I think you can be successful. So that's why I told him that I think if his partner is God, you didn't ever told me that you have another partner working with you. Right, so what's the point in all that? That sometimes when we're in business, and it relates a little bit to the more that we started out with Te'asem Alacha, sometimes, right over here particularly, after the construction of the Mishkan, there's a chance that they would look at it, the Chachmei Lev, the Jewish people, and they would say, wow, look at what we've just built. Look at this beautiful structure. Look at these delicate tapestries. Look at this fine gold craftsmanship. Look at this silversmith work. This is a work of beauty. And they would attribute it all to themselves. Right? Even though it was a Mishkan, that danger always exists. And so therefore comes along Moshe Rabbeinu and he says to them, this is not just a reiteration of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling before. This was a powerful lesson. That sometimes we do things, and as we do them, we lose sight of the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is behind us. We feel possessive over that endeavor which we just took. And therefore comes the pasuk, and Moshe Rabbeinu, he tells us, you should be aware that everything that you do is with God's help. Okay, with God's help, we will continue again in Sefer Vayikra, but not for Parshas Vayikra, as we will be in Poland next year. And maybe there will be a Parsha Shir here for the Yeshiva for those guys that are here. I think it's matzah baking. I don't know. No, but then they might do it on Wednesday. Either way, if not, we'll meet again in some time.